Today we're going to dive into questions of politics, free speech, and the Democratic Party in particular, because as someone who I think I'm fairly up and down, I have some liberal beliefs and then I'm pretty moderate in some other ways. And what I found is speaking with people from different backgrounds, there's always more that we agree on, especially in person, than we disagree on. And I always appreciate that. Like, I've dated a libertarian. My dad is fairly conservative sometimes. I'm friends with people that have come from failed socialist states and are very anti-socialism. I'm friends with, you know, Bernie or bust people. And we can all disagree and still, you know, live proudly as Americans or as friends and in our own communities. And I think that's sort of what we have started to lose sight of here. So as a podcaster, well, someone who's attempting to become one and a huge fan of podcasts generally, even before I had the idea to start my own, of course I listen to Joe Rogan. He has a massive audience. He's a really interesting guy. I think he's really intelligent about some things, and it's really awesome what he has built for himself and his career. He's really deep into MMA, a lot of different fighting styles, Fear Factor, obviously, his comedic work, and then this insanely successful podcast. And it's so cool to see him have just a really diverse group of hosts on from different places, backgrounds, experiences, and political philosophies. And what happened recently is Joe had come out as, like, generally saying that he was thinking of supporting Bernie in the primaries. He said that during a pod. And there was a lot of mixed reaction about that. And I think a lot of the blowback actually came from liberals on that endorsement. And then recently, this week actually, he said that Democrats have made fools of us and forcing us to essentially elect Joe Biden, and that he doesn't think Biden would age into the role and that he wouldn't be able to handle it. We'd be only relying on the cabinet, and that he would rather vote for Trump in that instance. And the guest that he had on said he wouldn't vote for either of them. And so this has caused a huge issue, and that's kind of what I want to start addressing in today's pod. I think that Joe is completely entitled to his own opinion. It's a bit confusing for me to do the jump from supporting Bernie to then saying you'd vote for Trump. But I think he was really talking about that in the context of Biden's health and age and less about policy. But I don't know. Maybe he is as thoughtless as that to think that he can support Bernie in former years of Trump will be the same. I shouldn't say thoughtless, but it's pretty astounding. I sometimes just wish, this is coming just from my opinion and a judgmental place, and I'm not saying I'm right, but I wish that Joe would take a sociology class sometimes. So I think he's really good about some stuff, and then he'll just say something like that. And it's like, damn, man, you blow my mind. How inconsistent is this? I don't get it. And it's completely fair to criticize Biden's health. It's a huge, huge, huge issue. He obviously doesn't have it together like he did years ago under Obama. He's aging really poorly. I think his speech is the worst out of any of the candidates running. Bernie looks like a young spring stallion compared to Joe. And that's a totally fair criticism. And I think that, you know, you would hope that he would surround himself with a really strong cabinet, as I think any president should. And that means his VP pick is really important. But is he going to be able to stand up to the debate season against someone like Trump, who's really verbose and I think on top of his game for the most part? And then some people started saying, you know, this is a Bernie or bust issue, which I think it's maybe less of that for Joe than just truly worrying about Biden's health. But it does lead into this question of the left kind of imploding in on itself and the left not really being able to carry itself through this really traumatic election season. And part of that, I think, started within the last couple of years. I mean, it's been happening on social media for so long. My goodness, social media is so toxic in some ways to our society, but it's this just inherent knee-jerk reaction that you get online. And that really doesn't translate, I don't think, to the way that people speak to one another in person. And then it becomes a soundbite. So, you know, 1 week, Joe Rogan is a hardcore Bernie supporter. The next week, he'll vote for Trump over Biden. What are we to make of that? And he does have a really huge reach. So it is an important question. And I think, you know, with a platform like that, you do have to be responsible to some of the things that you say. The problem that a lot of Democrats have now is that our PR is suffering, and Republicans are so, so, so talented and good and sniper-like at this, because they have been able to sell someone to the Christian right who had an affair and paid off a porn star, or multiple. They have sold someone to a lot of the military who was seemingly completely healthy, fine, young, and strong until the Vietnam draft came up, and then has bone spurs. And this person is supposedly, you know, our strong, brave leader and commander-in-chief that has the full force of the American military behind him. So Republicans are really, really good at this, and I admire him for it. And Democrats truly need to get their shit together. So if Joe Biden is the nominee, we need to fix these things. And part of that, I think, begins with reframing the conversation around Bernie or bust. How can, if people truly believe in these progressive values, they weave that into the larger Democratic platform? Similar to how the Squad, I think, has now learned from a bit of their time in Congress, and there's a bit less friction between those four members of Congress and Nancy Pelosi. They realize, you know, how political, social, and cultural capital works in that system. And Obama warned us about this sort of devolution within the Democratic Party a couple of months ago by saying that we can't take ourselves out of the game via a circular firing squad. And I think a lot of that also comes down to issues of free speech and the First Amendment. Now, no one really needs me to lecture them on these issues. I still have a lot to learn. But I will forever defend someone's right to free speech, and the liberals truly need to get on board, because I think it's the people, like Joe said in his conversation with Dan Crenshaw, which I respect Dan Crenshaw, and I think that he's an upstanding leader, even though I may disagree with some of his policy positions. I'd much rather have him in office than some other people. And Joe was saying, you know, Joe leans liberal, but he's looking around this landscape and the progressive landscape and the more centrist Democratic landscape and how people are speaking to each other online specifically. And he feels like there isn't a place for him. There isn't leadership. You know, you take one wrong step and it's off with their heads. And that's Democrats doing that to themselves and each other. And for some people, it's in the name of progress. And for others, it's a really problematic way to conduct business. And I think I would argue that the Republicans effectively are not experiencing that right now within their party. So a perfect example of this is what happened with the Tiki Torch marches and those fucking idiots. Oh my God. I wish we could be done talking about white supremacy. But unfortunately, or fortunately, that hate speech is protected by the First Amendment. So those people do have the right to say those things. It's their First Amendment right. And I would argue that it's better that they sort of come out of the shadows and we can identify their faces. Those fuckers can be on TV and we can shame them out of society. But the issue becomes when a lot of progressives and liberals, and I think, you know, fascism and white nationalism is a pretty clear-cut example, but the issue becomes when liberals start policing hate speech and policing free speech. And that's really problematic, because no one died and made us king. And that is a surefire way to drive away people that are more moderate or libertarian that you would like to invite into the party. So just because your feelings are hurt or you don't agree with what someone says doesn't mean that you can commit acts of physical violence or destroy someone's property. Now, you know, does it make me feel good to hear the Nazi got his, you know, stomach stomped on? Yeah, we fought a whole fucking world war about this. But the point being that those idiots have the right to say those things, and it's protected under the First Amendment. And that's become an issue for a lot of important organizations like the ACLU, which I think has done some amazing work in terms of desegregation, gay rights, reproductive health. And then the question becomes, you know, does the ACLU refuse to defend, in the terms of litigation, white supremacists? That's a question that's above my pay grade to answer. And this may, you know, be filed under unpopular opinions, but I think it's a really important conversation to have. I went to CU Boulder from 2015 to 2018 to get my MFA in Interdisciplinary Documentary Media Practices. Woohoo, nerds unite. And while I was on campus, I got in some really hot water with a lot of my friends, and a lot of them were more liberal than I am, or more leftist or more progressive. And they were saying Milo Yiannopoulos was going to come to the campus and speak and give a speech, give a talk. I think the Young Conservatives of campus were sponsoring the speech. And all my friends said, we need to go out and we need to protest that because it's hate speech and it shouldn't be allowed on campus. And I pushed back then, and I got a lot of hate for it from people, you know, that are pretty much of my own party, even though I don't like to think of it as such a bifurcation and a binary system. But, you know, how could you stand up for someone like that? What are you saying? You don't represent us. You don't understand. You know, it's like, yeah, of course, I'll never understand some of your experiences, but you don't get to choose who gets to come on campus and speak or not. And I would argue it's even more problematic and detrimental if you stop someone from coming to campus. Allow them to come and give the speech, and you can stand outside that auditorium and protest and say whatever the fuck you want under your First Amendment right to this person that you hold so much hate in your heart for. But they have the right, and you should not be anti-rights if you want to win votes, and especially the election in 2020. I've gotten into a lot of hot water with, you know, friends, coworkers, neighbors, family friends, even a lot of my family. We're a pretty politically diverse family. When you extend this conversation further, for example, with someone like Bill Maher, who you can criticize his comedy, but he's been a really successful television host for years and years. I agree with him on some things. I really disagree with him on others, but I think he does a good job trying to get a lot of conservatives on his show. And he really has harped on liberals for, you know, being ridiculously sensitive to bringing conservatives on and letting conservatives say some things. And if a Democrat comes on the show and says some stupid shit, call him out too. So what had happened was, it was the 50th anniversary of Berkeley's free speech movement, and Berkeley invited Bill Maher to come to the school to give a commencement speech. And then Bill Maher had Sam Harris, who I love and respect a lot of his thought, and Ben Affleck and a number of others on his show. And this clip is totally viral. So Sam Harris is very clear about what he perceives as an imminent threat to liberal democracy and the peaceable world. And that is a radicalized member of a threatening group getting their hands on nuclear power and nuclear weaponry. And right now he identifies that group as Islamic fundamentalists. And he does this very precisely and very carefully. And he really criticizes the Abrahamic school of thought that is Islam, and specifically the members of Islam that are fundamentalists and radicals. And this has absolutely nothing to do, and he's repeated over and over, it has nothing to do with the color of anyone's skin who believes in Islam. You can believe in Islam and be from anywhere in the world, and it's the belief he's criticizing. And he has always encouraged and propped up moderates that are members of Islam, because he believes that a lot of the healing is going to come from the moderate, like the large moderate chunk of Islam, and I actually believe that that's the case. And he has come under a lot of hot water and has been accused of being Islamophobic and racist for saying that Islamic extremism poses a unique and fundamental threat to the United States and beyond. And, you know, without saying it explicitly, a lot of liberals need to realize that that has been the case in terms of the wars that we have been fighting for all of these years. That was what happened in Afghanistan when we first invaded. That was truly who we were going after. It's what happened when we killed Osama bin Laden. Iraq, totally questionable and really terrible, completely different setting, but that's also created a really terrible vacuum for ISIS and all the problems that have come along with ISIS. So Sam comes on, and I've read his book, The End of Faith, and I recommend it to anyone. And the question always is that particularly liberals give Sam pushback on this, saying, you don't understand, what you're saying is bigoted. And you can say the same thing about conservative Christian fundamentalists. And he always says, yes, they scare me just as well, which I completely agree with. And, you know, what about Catholics and the Crusades? And Sam's response always is, if the Crusades were happening now, that would be the focus of his research and that would be the crux of his argument, and it would not be Islam. But we have been faced with a specific issue in terms of bombings and terrorist threats and violence that's Islam-based or Islamic. And there's just no getting around that fact. So, you know, I respect Ben Affleck for the creator that he is. Good Will Hunting is one of my all-time favorite movies. Absolutely love it. And you can respect someone and also disagree with the way that they react to something. And he, of course, blew up in the stereotypical way that most liberals do when listening to Sam Harris. And Sam, he wouldn't even let Sam speak. And Sam was trying to state his case really calmly and clearly, and he had numbers and facts and data to back it up. And so Ben Affleck just eventually says, it's gross, it's racist. So, you know, of course, Sam, as a white person, can't say anything to that. And Bill tries to calm everything down and shut him up, but the clip went totally viral. So there's ripple in the waters from that. And then the next week, Bill addresses the issue. And what has come up is that students at Berkeley, after what had transpired on his show, started a petition to stop him from come and delivering the speech at graduation because they thought that he was part of this racist consortium because he's been an atheist for a long time and fairly anti-religion and supported Sam's beliefs. So there you go. It's a perfect example of the left eating itself from the inside out. And Sam Harris had the exact right to say what he wanted to say on that show, and Ben Affleck had the same exact right for saying what he wanted to say. And we really, really, truly need to be careful of how we police free speech and thought, because we cannot be the enemies of that. It's a recipe for disaster, and I think we all know it. So I would implore us all at this moment to pause, take a breath, dig a little deeper when you can, allow space for people to explore their own thoughts and feelings and arguments, and then if you feel that you don't agree, you can have a conversation about it. But shutting someone up altogether, I mean, we know. If it's a Hitler, we know how we've dealt with that in the past. But, you know, shutting someone up like Milo at a place like CU, what does that say about who we allow to speak and how we listen to one another? And I think really to make sort of a healing in this country and move forward, we need to be able to sit with one another and really hear each other. And I'm not saying that that's the case for people that are white nationalists or racist or Nazis, but I'm talking about your neighbor that's a little different from you, or, you know, someone like myself that would believe something that Sam Harris says. But if you ask me, did I go to church when I was younger? Yeah, and I enjoyed the ritual. And I think that's missing in a lot of people's lives. So let's extend the hand and enrich the conversation. All right, in our Charlie Don't Surf moment, the segment for this week, it's pretty great. A lot of teams and sports have been stopped, like team activities and sports have been stopped because of Corona, which I think is the smart thing to do temporarily. And a lot of people have been trying to resource and work around this. And I think NASCAR has done a really interesting thing that's kind of flipped racing on its head. They have instituted iRacing. And every Sunday, while we're in lockdown, at the same time that they would have a regular race, they're essentially having the Mario Kart experience, but professionally. They're having their professional racers sit in these pods and drive the cars around. And there's an algorithm and a computer that reacts in real time. The only thing that looks a bit weird is if the track is smaller. The wrecks don't look as awesome, even though I hate when anyone gets hurt in NASCAR. Barstool Sports has gotten involved. I know El Presidente is making bets on this because it's iRacing and you can. And the most hilarious thing is Bubba Wallace rage quit the race last weekend and he has gotten dropped from his sponsor. So take your Nintendo seriously, boys. They're also doing recaps of the races every weeknight, like most intense moments over the years. So you can look out for, I think, I'll have to look up where the next race is being held, but Sunday fun day, get your race day due, your chicken wings, and giggity, 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 let's go racing. All right. After a little bit of that heavy stuff, we know, because it's not all apocalypse, we want a little sugar with our coffee, a little mint for our julep. So now the coffee. Good news this week. Big Wild, who I absolutely adore. He is an amazing electronic musician, but he's a little different. He plays the fucking cajon on stage. If you don't know what that is, it's a vertical hippie box. He has beautiful long hair. I'm like, is that guy playing the fucking cajon? And he sings and he has all these amazing beats. He just released an acoustic version of his electronic album and it's so dope. Any of you guys that are listening, please hit me up. I adore you and want to come on the road with you. 100% of profits from all Big Wild merch that is sold from April 7th to April 14th, so that's today through the 14th, will be donated to Sweet Relief's COVID-19 fund, which helps struggling people in that community. I first saw Big Wild by accident. I didn't know that he was opening at Red Rocks. So I lived in Boulder for a while getting my MFA. Of course, you got to go to Red Rocks. We went as many times as possible. Really insane, awesome music venue. People aren't confused about this. It's been voted like the best music venue in the States for so many years running. I would argue that the Gorge in Washington is better because it's my favorite soft spot in my heart. But that's for a later story, later pod. And we had tickets to Rowdy Town, which is an annual concert that Big Gigantic puts on. How I discovered Big Gigantic is a whole nother adventure. You don't have to be a huge electronic music fan to enjoy them, but especially to enjoy Big Wild. It's a lot of beautiful harmonies, funky beats, just wonderful layering. It's a great time. It'll make you get off your ass and dance, if that's, you know, your cup of coffee. And so we get there a little bit early, we're chilling, having fun, drinking, yada yada, got our rave gear on and all that stuff. And I'm not hardcore about this, please, I'm 30, but I think you need to like do whatever you want within reason and just be your authentic fucking self, because what else is there? And I've apologized for too many years for not doing that shit because, you know, bullshit. So yeah, and so the sun's kind of setting. And all of a sudden, I see this guy walk on stage, and it's just him on his own, and he's looping all these tracks, and it was so beautiful and awesome. And Crickets comes on, and I just almost start crying. I'm like, holy shit, dude. When I get there, all that stuff. So please check out his new album, support his merch. He's been touring with a group of wonderful musicians. They're really dope. Worth checking out. That show, I also saw Weathen for the first time, and this was before he blew up, before he played Coachella, I think, with Yodeling Boy. It was savage. If you know, you know. And of course, Rowdy Town is dope. So thanks for listening, guys. Stay safe and healthy out there. Chins up, and I'll talk to you later.